morning, everybody. It's Cathy Duffy here from Devon Insight. Thank you for joining us again today. We've got the sunshine once again, which is absolutely wonderful. I am really delighted to be able to welcome Joe Parsons, who I know very well. We have and done some events together where Joe has talked about her history within the catering industry as a person with sight loss, which is fascinating. She has also kindly invited us to come along and do talks at some of her events about sight loss awareness. One which would have been the Pudding Club, where I have never eaten so much wonderful food in my life. It was amazing. And Joe has kindly come and as one of our guest speakers at some events in Totnes as well. So I'm very, very glad to be able to touch base with her again. That note, I will say welcome and thank you for taking time out from your very busy schedule, Joe. And I will hand over to you.
Oh, thank you, Cathy. Well, good morning, everybody. It's lovely to be here. As Cathy said, I'm Joe Parsons, visually impaired chef. Always been visually impaired in my catering background. I was diagnosed when I was 9 years old with Stargardt's. And so my sight loss journey started at quite a young age. I was only partially sighted then. I'm now severely sighted. I went to the College of Food in 1977 and trained as a chef for 2 years. That presented a few challenges, but I was very lucky to have a really good lecturer that made sure that, you know, I got through it all. And did really well with getting jobs. It was actually the beginning of my career was fine. It was more towards the end of being employed that I started to meet with a few problems of... I think it's more probably when my sight deteriorated, when I couldn't read chitties and things like that. But I mean, most of the time I've got on okay. When I started to have these problems with an employer that I was working for, I got involved with RNIB. And that was when really things changed a lot for me. And they asked me to help them with their Work Matters campaign, which I duly did. And I ended up working on This Morning with Fern Britton and Philip Schofield, than it was at the time. Wow. And then eventually RNIB asked if I would be interested in going to work for them. And that's when really the most lovely part of my catering career started, because we set up a conference centre in the basement of the John Bright RNIB building in Birmingham, and which is where I was living at the time. And it was thought that we would just be catering for really RNIB meetings, but we opened it up to outsiders, and that meant, our biggest customer really was the Environment Agency, okay. Who had nearly, every meeting really that they had in Birmingham, they had with us. And, you know, what was absolutely fantastic about this was it was such a hands-on visual awareness for people that had got full sight. They could actually see what people with sight loss could actually do. So my kitchen was open plan. Customers would come into the kitchen to get their two-course lunch, and everybody in the kitchen had, well, actually everybody was registered blind, but everybody had got some sort of different, you know, sight loss. We took trainees that would come to us for 6 to 12 months and, you know, try and instill some confidence and some good life skills. So that's where really my journey started, with helping other people with with sight loss. And I just found that, I found it so rewarding, but for want of a better expression, it opened my eyes as well to realise that everyone's sight loss journey is different. Everybody's, you know, vision is different. Everyone has different needs. And nothing is impossible. You can always find a way round a problem when you know what the problem is. And to see people come through our door that were, well, really hadn't got any confidence, and the way they left us was, pardon me, that the phone ringing in the background. I think we'll get that.
It's fine, don't worry.
A lady that came to us, in fact, we ended up employing her. She worked with us full time. When she came to us, she said to me, all I want to be able to do a little bit of baking. And the first, she stood next to me watching me separate eggs. And that would normally terrify most people. And she said to me, can I have a go at that? Yeah, of course you can. So she had a little go and she did very, very well. And then I said to her, right, the first thing you've got to learn is how to line a tin with baking parchment, or I won't be able to do that. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to do it if you want to be able to bake. Well, she went from saying, I can't do that, because I always said to everybody, there's always a way around it, to actually being employed to make all our desserts. She was absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And another chap that came to us had lived, he was with us for about 2 years actually. We managed to get some more funding for him to stay longer. And this will always bring a tear to my eye. He came to us having been, he's in his early 40s, had always lived with mum and dad, had been very cosseted. They wouldn't let him do this, wouldn't let him do that. Mum did all the cooking. And to be honest, for the first 3 months, I really was pulling my hair out, because he really, I didn't think he'd ever find his way around the kitchen. But we persevered and we got there, and he was fantastic. And his mother, his mother's health deteriorated, and his father became her main carer. And then unfortunately, all of a sudden, Kevin lost his father. And I had a phone call from him, and in his lovely Black Country accent, he said, everything Yao taught me is coming into place now. He said, if it hadn't have been for you and Martin, who was my lovely sous chef, he said, my mum would have had to have gone into a care home, and now I can be her carer. Now, that was fantastic to hear. He was so proud that he could do that. And that was really by just learning some simple skills that could help him prepare meals. And, you know, that changed his life. And, you know, in all intents and purposes, it changed his mother's as well, because she would have to have gone into a care home. So, you know, so everybody's different. Everybody's sight loss journey is different. Everybody's needs in a kitchen are different. But I believe Cathy's got some questions for me, and if I can help people in any way to, you know, tweak things. I mean, Cathy, Tracy, you're brilliant at that anyway. You help me. So, you know, everybody needs help. Everybody can learn. Even I can learn. And we just have to be open to suggestions. And I actually believe being able to prepare a meal for yourself is so rewarding, and it's quite uplifting as well to think,
I completely agree.
I think this goes back to being much younger, and has followed me all through my catering career. There is nothing like putting a meal on the table, knowing you've prepared it, hearing all those noises from people, and that makes you feel so good, because that's something that you've done. You know, I also think that never ever be scared to ask for help. My husband helps me. There are certain things I can't do now on my own. It doesn't stop me, you know, doing what I do. I run a supper club. I'm cooking for 44 people tomorrow night. So we're busy in the kitchen yesterday and today, getting it all ready. But, you know, Brett is my support worker. Brett helps me. I couldn't do it without him. You know, as I say, there are various things that I can't do on my own and I need some help with, and I'm not too proud to ask. If that helps you be able to achieve what you set out to do and put a steak and ale pie on the table with just some help from somebody else, then don't be afraid to ask. I don't believe that everybody has to do everything totally independently. I also really don't believe that if you want to buy a ready-made sauce from one of the supermarkets, you know, they make, I've said this to various people that have been to my Cooking with Confidence workshops, yes, I make cheese sauce. You know, I've been doing it for a very, very long time, but I'm not going to lie and say I don't keep a tub of ready-made in the freezer. A, if I can't be bothered, and B, if I'm just in such a rush, I haven't got time. Something as simple as getting some fish pie mix from the fishmonger or the supermarket, which is all lovely and fresh and all cubed up, so you haven't got to do anything to it. Putting it in a dish, if you haven't got the skill or the sight to make a cheese sauce, the fresh cheese sauce, which is always found with the fresh pasta sauces, open that up, spread that over the top, and you can either put some potato over the top of it, or you can just put some grated cheese over the top of it. Or what I like to do is I have breadcrumbs. I always have breadcrumbs in the freezer, fresh breadcrumbs. Sprinkle some of those over the top with a bit more grated cheese. Pop that in the oven, and you've really got a fish pie. And yeah. So simple. I mean, you can add things to it. You can add some onions to it, some mushrooms. So I like to put some leeks through mine. But that is simple and actually hasn't taken a lot of effort. But actually, you have still done it yourself. And no one should beat themselves up for having a little bit of help along the way. I hope that helps you.
That's such an important message, Jo, because it is about, you know, it's not a failure to find shortcuts.
No,
it's
not
sensible.
At all.
it's actually sensible and practical, and that's kind of where the importance of sharing tips and hints comes in as well.
Sorry to sort of talk over you, but one of the gentlemen that has been to me on several occasions for a cookery lesson, one of the things he wanted to do was make stew and dumplings,
yeah.
And which we duly did, and I'd got everything ready for him to make dumplings. And out of his bag, he produced Marks and Spencer's dumpling mix. And he said, can I use this, Joe? And what I said to him was, what would you use at home? Well, I'd probably use the dumpling mix. I said, then that's what we'll use. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You won't have to weigh it out. It'll make it nice and simple for you. It's all about finding those little, just those little shortcuts that make your life easier and help you actually produce something that you're going to enjoy to eat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the gentleman that you were talking about is actually here with us today.
Is he?
I think he is.
Can I say hello?
You can.
Alan, hello, my darling. I'm sure you recognise that story.
Yes.
And it was the best way. That was the best way round that solution for you, because that's what you were going to use at home. Have you used the dumpling mix again?
Oh, yes. And I often use ordinary mixes because it's much better. At least to me it is. I'm in the process. I had a large chicken this weekend. I've frozen two meals from it for next week.
Fantastic.
And two reels in the fridge. And I'm in the process of making a chicken pie.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. And
for my lunches.
That is fantastic. And are you using some already rolled out pastries? Have you bought
Yes.
That's what we discussed, wasn't it? We decided that that was the best way around it. And, you know, I've got, on Supper Club this week, I've got chicken and ham pie. Homemade chicken and ham pie is our main course. And I don't make puff pastry for that. I buy the ready-rolled puff pastry for it.
Mm.
And I'm not ashamed of that at all.
No, I'm not.
I'm glad to hear that you're still cooking, Alan. You'll have to come and see me again when we can open up and have visitors again.
Right. Yes. I often think of you, and we'll try and get together as the summer comes on.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we can come over to nearer to you and see you.
I'll come to you. That's all right.
All right. Okay. We'll see if we can sort that out. We'll go back to Kathy now because I know she's got some questions that she wants to ask me, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alan, thank you for that. It's lovely to get a little bit of feedback, and that sounds completely amazing. It's lovely to hear your voice again. It's been a long time since I've been able to come over to the west of Devon and catch up with you. So it's so nice to hear your voice.
Mm. Yes. I hope we start meetings again.
We are in the process of planning those. Obviously, we're at the mercy of where the restrictions are. So it's likely we're going to be waiting until the lockdown is completely eased. So we're looking at sometime in June.
Good.
We're working towards it.
Mm.
And we're every bit as kind of gnashing at the bit as everyone else. We can't wait to catch up with everybody.
Good, yes.
Super. Okay, thank you for that. That was so nice to hear. My screen has just decided to go to sleep, so I'm just going to wake it up, and then I've got the questions in front of me.
Well, Kathy, while you're waiting for that, I'll just say a couple of things, and that is,
yes, of course.
When you first start preparing anything, vegetables or cutting anything, the first thing that you must do is secure your chopping board. Now, you can buy slip mats. I'm sure a lot of you have probably already got them to put underneath the chopping board. If you haven't got one, put a damp tea towel underneath your chopping board, and that will stop that slipping. So when you start to cut with a knife, you're not going to slip and cut yourself. The other thing is, where knife safety is concerned, don't ever use a blunt knife. you probably think, oh, I won't use that knife, it's too sharp. You're less likely to cut yourself with a sharp knife than you are with a blunt knife, as stupid as that sounds. Take your time. Make sure that the knife feels comfortable in your hand so that you've got the right size knife for the right job. No good using a great big knife to try and peel a potato. You know, you need to make sure you've got the right tool or the right knife, and take your time. Don't think you're going to beat Jamie Oliver or Gordon Ramsay. I certainly am not. When I cuss, I'm probably, you know, quicker than a novice, but I still always take my time. I'd rather have my fingers than than have a really bad accident. So that's my first tip about cutting and preparing vegetables. Also, a lot of vegetables, something like a carrot, you know, as long as it gets a good wash, you don't really even need to peel it. You can, you know, there's a lot of goodness in the skin. So, you know, don't be too precious about that. But certainly always make sure that you've secured that chopping board, and that will keep you. Any luck with your screen, Cathy?
Yes, no, it's all. We're firing on all cylinders again. So, but actually, that's really, really useful information. And it is about kind of some of the things that we've been taught over the years about having to peel everything. There are many fruits and vegetables that actually you don't have to peel. You're so right. And actually, a lot of the vitamins, minerals, and roughage are within the skin.
They are, absolutely. The other thing, going back to, you know, we were talking about ready-made cheese sauce, a lot of the supermarkets now do already chopped onions, already chopped vegetables. Again, don't beat yourself up about buying those. You can also buy bags of frozen sliced onions. Always good to have a bag of those in the freezer. Yeah. I mean, I use food processor to cut a lot of my onions up. I'll peel them, Brettle check I've got all the, you know, all the bits and pieces and the root off, and I'll cut them into four and then pop, you know, a few at a time into the food processor. I find that works if you're using them straight away. Don't overpulse them because otherwise they tend to go a bit watery. But, you know, the night before last, we had a stir fry, and I'm not going to say I stand and cut all the stir fry mix. I could do, but I didn't. I buy the already done stir fry, and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's lots of way round things, like the fish pie. I know I keep going back to it, but, you know, the supermarkets can also do, they also do a lovely fresh cream potato. So if you wanted to put potato on the top and you didn't want to do potato yourself, also you can mash new, I know it's a bit of a sacrilege, but you can mash new potatoes or crush them. I absolutely love them, just mash slightly with some butter, and you can scatter those on top of a fish pie or a chicken pie. And that makes a nice crust to it, and it makes it easy for you.
That's
another little tip.
Yeah, that's so true. I know you've touched on this, excuse me, but are there any specialist aids for people with visual impairment that can be used for cookery, such as talking measuring scales?
As far as I know, as far as I'm aware, we had them in the kitchen at Concept in Birmingham. I don't tend to use them in my kitchen. But there is a very, very good talking microwave, Cobalt. There is a talking measuring jug. There are talking scales. And I believe there are talking food probes as well, which I think are very useful. Very useful.
Yes, but there are talking food probes.
I've got digital scales, and you know, then I've always got Brett around. So yesterday I was making very chocolate pudding for tomorrow night, and there were steamed chocolate puddings. And you know, each time I weighed something, Brett would check. I mean, it'd be so easy to say, Brett, will you weigh this out for me? But and he would willingly do that, but then I would lose my independence. So it always happens that I weigh, he checks it, and I do that because I've been caught out on a few occasions thinking a 7 was a 1 or a 1 was a 7. So I always get him to check that. But yeah, by all means, look at those. You know, look at those things to use, and also the cup measures. You know, cup measures are really good to try and adapt things. You know, so that you know that when you're making, I don't know, Yorkshire pudding, that you might use a cup that measures half a pint, so that you don't have to keep on trying to look at a measuring jug.
I have a very, very old cookbook that was my grandmother's, who was a cook, and all the recipes are in cup measures.
Yeah, I think cup measures are the best thing that ever happened. I think they're fantastic. They make life so easy, so easy. So yeah, also obviously bump ons on cookers. I mean, I've got a halogen hob, and I've got my bump ons, so I can feel where the, you know, where I put the oven on, where they put the hob on, and you know, all of that, all those little things, you know, really help. And I believe you can also get a device, sort of, you know, you put the little thing on your cup to tell you when it's nearly full. I believe you can get one to tell you when stuff's boiling as well.
Oh!
I believe you can.
I'll go look into that.
So go and have a look for that one, because that would be handy.
It is interesting that a lot of the halogen hobs and even kind of normal cookers, because designers want them to look sleek, that often there is very little contrast between the dials and the knobs, so it can be very, very difficult to see where the where you're setting your temperature to, which is where bump-ons become really, really important. And that's again one of the principles, is about the importance of contrast, so being able to see something against something else. So even when you are working, I'd say if you have a black kitchen surface, then it's sometimes quite useful to have a highly colored board, so that you can actually see where you're putting things.
That is very, very important. I mean, colour contrast to me is you know, a big necessity. So I would totally, you know, endorse that.
Super. And another thing that people have talked about that is really important as well is lighting. The difference that good lighting can make. So whether that's overhead lighting, so the lighting in the whole of your kitchen, under cupboards lighting that light down onto your work surfaces, or if you're using task lighting, so you have a daylight or some other version of a task light that's mobile enough that you can move it so that it's shining onto what you're actually doing.
What I tend to use, Kathy, where the scales are concerned, is I often use a torch.
Yes.
Because that will just enhance the light on the scales. And, you know, I do tend to get Brett just to just double check it. But I find that I make less mistakes if I use the torch.
Absolutely. So any way that you kind of improve lighting, whether that be a torch or anything else, the principle is maximize the light, can make a huge difference to how well you're able to use your usable site.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that was we've answered the next question, which I struggled to see the temperature dial on my oven. I think we've talked about kind of, you know, bump ons and how useful they can be, and about contrast and about lighting as well.
Yeah, and also have your, I suppose it's probably more difficult with a gas oven, but with an electric oven, I've got two ovens, and I have one set, one fan oven set at 160 and one set at 200. So actually, if Brett is out, and most of my pudding recipes are 160, if I'm roasting, I'll do, you know, the higher temperature. So I mean, obviously he does help me change the temperature, but if you can have it set on a particular setting so that you haven't got to keep on redoing it all the while, you've just got to turn it on.
That's a very good tip. Although let's be fair, you have the most amazing kitchen.
I've got a good kitchen, and you know, maybe going forward in the future, you know, maybe half a dozen people from your Kingsbridge group might like to come and have lunch here, and we can do like a little cookery demonstration or something like that, and they can ask questions. That might not, that might work, you know, that might be quite nice, because we can talk through a recipe and they can ask questions at the same time and then get a lunch afterwards.
Super, I will hold you to that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think that'd be quite nice to do something like that.
Yeah. Another question was, how do you label your products? The person was saying that they always put the wrong herbs in, which will make for an interesting meal.
I'm afraid I tend to use Brett for that. I looked at that question and thought, the only thing that you could do is have, I mean, obviously the main herbs that probably you use are probably bay leaves, thyme, maybe some sage, mixed herbs, oregano. I think I would probably either put them in different coloured containers or different tactile containers so that you know which is the one that you're going to, you know, that you know, you'll know which one is which. You know, put them in different shaped jam jars or different, you know, different shaped containers so that you know. I mean, you can do this, you can do the talking labels, can't you, Cathy?
You can, that's with the Pen Friend, which is a very good piece of equipment. It's quite an expensive piece of equipment, but that will read labels out to you. But for some people, you're absolutely right about different coloured tops, even if that is just using a strip of coloured masking tape around different containers. Or some tactile measure that's maybe on a certain herb you have one bump on the top and another one you have two.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Even with, you know, if people have their spices and herbs in a cupboard or in a rack, that actually they always put them in the same way, so they're just counting the tops. That relies on anyone else that lives you also putting things back in exactly the same place. But that can work quite well.
Yeah. And always, before you put anything in, take the top off and smell it, and that will give you a clue as well.
Yeah.
That will give you a clue. That's what I tend to do if Brett's not around.
Yeah. Actually, do you know what? That is just common sense, isn't it? Maybe that's the first step. But, yeah.
It is. Absolutely.
Okay, another person said that her husband doesn't like her using the oven as he thinks I will burn myself. Any tip?
Yeah, I was thinking about this one. I mean, what I tend to do, and I'll tell you what, they've become my best friend. Brett bought them me last year. I've got the oven gloves, and we call them gauntlets. They're the ones that you can literally, they've got like a plastic tactile top to them. You know which ones I mean, Gabby?
I do know the ones that you mean, and I'm absolutely certain when we first met, oh, God, it's a couple of years back now, we had a chat about these,
Oh, they are absolutely fantastic, and they go all the way up your arm. And they work perfectly. I think you'd be amazed, and I'm sure your husband would be amazed that they will protect you so much. They're not just like a normal pair of oven gloves. They are far more industrial and you know, protective. Really, they really are protective clothing. You'll be very, very wise to invest in a pair of those. That's what I would use.
Jill, can I ask, do you have the ones that are like in shape? They're like a pair of marigolds, so all your fingers can move independently?
Mine aren't, but actually those would be good. Those would be really good as well. I mean, you can literally pick the oven tray up with them on and you can't feel anything. They're absolutely amazing. Really, really, really good. I think any visually impaired person should definitely invest in a pair of those.
Fabulous. The next question was any kind of like tips or hints that you can share with food preparation. Now, you have talked about food processor. But you've also talked about the fact that people need not be too hard on themselves, and it's not a failure to buy pre-prepared sauces or pre-chopped foodstuffs as well. That's still cooking in my book.
Yes, it is.
Are there any other kind of tips or hints that you can share with food preparation?
Just trying to think, really. I mean, I do think that you just always need to be careful. You need to make sure that you're not rushing and that you've got plenty of time. And that the area that you're working in isn't cluttered, that it's nice and, you know, clean, so that you can feel that there's not lots of clutter around. Always make sure that the floor area, you can't suddenly trip over something if you've got hot water in a pan or a sharp knife. You know, make sure that you've actually cleared your surfaces everywhere. I think it is just a case of really just taking your time. And as we've covered earlier on, a lot of vegetables, butternut squash, don't bother to peel a butternut squash. You know, you do need to scrape out the pips, which is quite easy to do. But the skin is delicious on the roasted butternut squash. You know, most vegetables, you don't have to peel. I mean, even roast parsnips, you know, give them a good scrub, top and tail them, chop them up, roast them in the skin. You know, that's where all the goodness is.
Yeah.
You can cut a lot of a lot of, you know, a trouble of preparing vegetables if you don't peel them.
No, that is very true.
You know, and you know, that's what we do. I mean, even an old potato scrubbed and cut into wedges. The other thing is, where something like olive oil is concerned, keep it in a spray container so that you can spray. If you've got your vegetables, say you've got some onion and some butternut squash and some peppers, you know, and maybe some carrots and parsnips, and you're going to do some roasted vegetables, just spray the oil on the top and then rub it round a bit, and that makes life a lot easier as well.
That's a very good tip.
You know, that's what I use. I use my spray oil all the while. I mix salt and pepper together. So I've got a little container that's got a teaspoon of salt and half a teaspoon of pepper. And when I'm seasoning food, I just take a little sprinkle of that out. And you know, and then you're not constantly looking for the pepper and looking for the salt. You've got it all there ready for you.
See, these are the types of little kind of hints and tricks that it is so useful to be able to learn from you, because I would never have thought of that. But when you think about it, actually that is so simple, but it just makes life that much easier.
It makes life much, much easier. I'm just trying to think of some other things. I mean, even things like, use your microwave as well. I mean, I don't tend to do a lot of cooking in my microwave, but I heat things up. So if I'm using milk, I'll do that in the microwave. Yesterday when I was making the sponge, I sort of put the margarine or the butter and the sugar in a bowl, popped it in the microwave just to soften a little bit, and then I could get my mixer out and it would all mix up, you know, really well and much easier. It's just little things like that that really help.
Absolutely. And it is interesting talking about microwaves. And one of the things that I always say to people is buy for what you need. So think about a piece of equipment and how you will use it.
So if you're using, there is
an excellent talking microwave, but it's actually quite expensive. Now, if you're using it for all the functions that it can do, then that's absolutely fantastic, and that's money very well spent. But if you're just using it to heat items up and not using it for actually actively cooking recipes, then actually buying a bog standard microwave and using bump-ons will give you exactly what you need.
I couldn't agree more. Don't overcomplicate things.
The talking microwave, don't get me wrong, is fantastic and has lots of different functions on it, but if you're not going to use it for all those functions, that's a lot of money to spend for functions you're not going to use. But if you are, then that's by all means purchase it, because if you're using it in that way, then it's money well spent.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing about going back to preparing vegetables and food and everything, if you do a basic sort of like bolognese mix, something like I do the onions in the food processor. I grate my carrot. I do my celery in the food processor, and then put all that in with my mince, and make my bolognese sauce, tomato puree, and everything else in it. But that is fantastic to have in the freezer to make lots of other things. If you can make a basic bolognese, you can turn that into chili con carne. You can turn that into cottage pie. You know, it's very, very versatile.
Oh, you're giving us lots of good ideas here, Jo.
Well, it means then you're not completely making different things all the while. You know, you've got to try and, you know, make that work for you, so that you perhaps have, like Alan does. He does, you know, when he cooks, he'll put a couple in the freezer. So, you know, the following week or the week after, if he wants a roast chicken dinner, he hasn't got to cook it all over again. It's there ready for him.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to cook every day. Oh, he inspires me, totally. You know, even, particularly when I'm working Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, we always have easy teas Monday, Tuesday. Well, Wednesday we tend to eat what everybody at supper clubs had, but Monday night I always do a chicken casserole, and I put some in the freezer, so that we always do that. And normally on a Tuesday we have a stir fry and make it. That those are my two quick meals in the week. And so the way the casserole is concerned, I always put some in the freezer. It's great to just have to pull something out and think, oh, that'll make it easy for me tonight.
Absolutely. And another thing that people that I've spoken to have found really, really useful, especially when bulk cooking for that very reason, are slow cookers.
Oh, my slow cooker. I'm glad you've brought that up, because the trouble is you chat away and then you forget things, and I can't read notes if I've got those written down. I wouldn't be without my slow cooker. And I would recommend a slow cooker that you can actually take the middle, you know, the cooker bit out of the, you know what, that you can actually lift it out and put it on the stove. So not a crock base, a metal base, a non-stick metal base, because you can do so much with that. You can put it on the stove, put it back in the food in the slow cooker, or cook everything, just bung it in the slow cooker, switch it on, absolutely perfect. I mean, you can do pot roast, you can do casseroles, you can do a gammon joint, you can even do a steam sponge pudding, and I've done a rice pudding in there. I had a lady come that was, you know, came to a Devon Insight. She wanted to make a rice pudding, and we did a rice pudding in the slow cooker, and it was fantastic.
I love rice pudding. So, I'm glad to try that.
So the lady that husband worries about her cooking, I think if she invests in a slow cooker, that will be another way of actually, yeah, you know, helping her. I mean, you can cook a chicken in the slow cooker. You know, you can do it. They're just so good. Really, really, really good. So I would definitely would recommend one.
Okay, let me see. Next question was, I use a gas hob, but I'm finding it difficult to know if I have turned it off. I tend to put my hand on the burner. Please don't do that. Is there a safer way of checking? That's a tricky one, actually, isn't it?
It is a really tricky one. The only thing I can say is when I had a gas cooker, I was obsessed with making sure the knobs were turned off. I think I used to drive my dad mad when I lived at home. It was the last thing I ever did when I went to bed, check the gas cooker. I think that's the only thing you can do. If you know where the knobs are on the front, just make sure that they are all turned off just by feel. And you know, that's what I would recommend. To be honest, for anybody with a visual impairment, I think I would edge towards an electric cooker.
Yeah. And interestingly, I was talking to someone a good while back, pre-COVID, about the halogen hobs. And you can now buy ones that, and they are talking halogen hobs. They come as a separate unit. You just put on your work surface. You can either get them with the two pan areas, and you just plug it into a socket in your wall, which might be if people have a gas cooker that is starting to become quite anxious about using.
Absolutely.
Although some bombs can be very good.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. I actually have a, not a talking one, but we had problems with our cooker and had to replace it 18 months ago. And in the interim, while we were waiting for it to arrive, we invested in one of these. They're not too expensive to buy that we plug in. And to be honest, if I'm really busy, I use it now, and I use it for cookery demonstrations. So a talking one would be phenomenal. And I think for the lady who's got a gas cooker, if she's very nervous about that, then that's what I would recommend.
Yeah. So sometimes I think the biggest theme of kind of what we've been talking about today is, and you perfectly illustrated, Joe, is about finding, you know, not stopping doing something, but finding a way to adapt to make it easier for yourself, to make
there's
it feel possible.
Yeah, there is always a way around it. It might take a while, and, you know, I would say that, you know, you are fantastic at that, Kathy, when you can actually get out to people's homes in helping them find a way around it. And if, you know, you find a problem and you're not sure how to get around it, you can always, you know, come to me and we can try and sort that out together. But as I said to start with, everybody's sight loss journey is different.
Yes.
Everybody has different needs, but there is always a way around it.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I think I'm just going to do a quick check on my questions, but I think we've covered most of them. Yep. So it just leaves me really to say thank you so much, Jo.
You're welcome.
Really, really interesting talk. Just to say to everybody that is here, I know that we would normally open up the call at this point, but we're not going to today, and that's absolutely fine. But if anybody has any questions they would like to ask, and I'm just trying to find my notes, please give us a call on 01392 876 666. I'll say that again, is 01392 876 666, and I will be happy to either answer any questions that you have or forward those to Jo to see if we can get any questions or queries answered in that way, which would be super. So please feel free to contact us. Jo, once again, thank you so much. I know how busy you are, and I really do appreciate you taking the time. It's been lovely to catch up with you again, and I hope we can get face to face at some point soon.
Yeah, I hope so, Kathy. That would be really lovely. And you know, say hi to Jenny and Tracy for me.
Anything
I can do to help, you know, you've only got to ask.
Oh, you're a star. Thank you so much. Just to let people know that next week our speaker, Tracy, I can't get my screen up, so if you could just let us know who next week's speaker will be.
Hi, it's Kyra Dodd, who actually works for Living Options. So it will be Kyra and one of her colleagues. So her colleague will be talking about the Time to Talk service that Living Options actually run, and Kyra is a counsellor at Living Options. So they'll be our callers, but then they won't just be talking about those two services. They'll be talking about what Living Options do as a whole for people who have difficulties and disabilities in the Devon area.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tracy. My screen's locked up. So on that note, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Jo, if you could just stay on the line for 5 minutes, would be fantastic. Hopefully we will catch up with you all next week. Everybody, take care and stay well, and hopefully speak with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.